Hi everyone, welcome to Final Score with the Score. I am the Score, and Chelsea have won. Chelsea 3, Leeds 2 in the FA Cup. We are through to the next to the quarterfinals, where we will play Leicester at home. So we're through, but I think the story is not that we won, but the performance today. Because we were very, very lucky to get through. So we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the performance. We're going to talk about which players played well, which players didn't play well. And we're going to talk about Pochettino. I'm sure we're going to talk about Pochettino again, because I certainly have thoughts on Pochettino, and I think other people probably do as well. We want to hear from you. We want you to come up and share your views. Obviously in the normal, respectful, polite way, as ever. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about Chelsea. So, welcome everyone. It is nice to get a win, I must admit, after Sunday. I was worried when we went 1-0 down, and when they equalised, I think everyone was a bit worried we were going to lose. Yeah, we didn't convince. So I'm going to go through the game. I'm hopefully going to be joined by Rambles at some point. I hope I've invited him. So hopefully he'll come on and join us, and maybe some other people. We're here. We're going to do the space, and we're going to record it. So welcome, everybody. Do come up. Do request to come up and speak, because I don't want to be up here on my own. It'd be good to have other people up here and talk about the game. So what we'll do is we'll go through the game. And we'll look at the main events of the game and the performance and the scorers and everything. And then we'll get into talking about the game. The lineup. Pochettino made 5 changes. We had Mudryk starting. We had Noni Madueke starting. Raheem Sterling, that was the attack with Nicholas Jackson, Endo and Caicedo in midfield, and we had changes at the back. Trevor Chalobah started, Alfie Gilchrist started, which was really great, and who else was in defence? I can't remember now. Who else was in defence? Oh, Zazi, of course. And of course, Sanchez was in goal. He was our starting goalkeeper today, and so that was the 11. Leeds kind of made some changes to their 11 as well. It wasn't their normal starting 11. So we started off badly. We started off badly, as often seems to happen. Chelsea seemed to start every half under Pochettino badly. We weren't at it at all. We were slow. We were sloppy. We made a really, really poor mistake in defence, which Leeds took full advantage of and won 1-0 up after 8 minutes. And we all thought the worst at that point, I think, and rightly so. I think we weren't playing well. Leeds looked sharper than us, quicker than us, better than us, it wasn't great. So we then managed to get an equaliser with Nicholas Jackson. I think Nicholas Jackson got the equaliser, didn't he? Yes, Nicholas Jackson got the equaliser, So back in the game, once we got the equaliser, we probably started playing well. And it always seems to be with this team, we have to be behind or underdogs to play well, which is a really annoying trait, to be honest. But anyway, we did play well then. And then Mudryk started to get into the game then, started to have a few good runs, getting in behind, getting some crosses in, like looking sharp. And he got his just desserts. He got a great goal. A really good goal, making a run kind of diagonal from the centre. Not a good ball in from Gusto, and he smacked it in. Really good goal. We went 2-1 up. 2-1 up at half time. We all thought, okay, we'll be all right. We're going to be okay. Nope. As per usual, we came out in the second half and we were not great at all. Again, we were sloppy. We were slow. We were not at it, not, you know, almost like we're 2-1 up, we don't need to do anything now. I have no idea what Pochettino says to them at half time. I really don't. It's a mystery to me. So we came out really bad, and then Leeds put a good move together and scored. a good goal, really good goal from across, headed into the net. Of course, the Leeds scorer got their first two goals for Leeds ever. So, you know, Charity FC is back in full force again, gifting people their first ever career goals, as always. And so he got a brace and it was 2-2. And then again, Leeds started to come into the game. Leeds were the better team. We thought Leeds were going to get a winner. It was pathetic, really. It was really just slow. Yeah, we didn't create much. The final ball was missing. Like, we wasted counter-attacks. It was just, there didn't seem to be any tactical structure to the team at all. It was just like Frank Lampard, like, let's just wing it. You know, we'll set up a basic formation and then just try and win it with vibes. That's what it looked like. And, it looked like we were going to lose. It looks like we're going to look like it was going to extra time. It looks like we were, again, playing for extra time or something, like being defensive, not really, you know, going for it. And then we somehow managed to get a goal on the counter-attack. Conor Gallagher smacks it in right towards the end. One of Pochettino's favourite players. One of Pochettino's favourite players. Got us the winner and we won. We were through to the quarter-final. So, yeah, that's the story of the day. We want to get people's views. We want to hear about the game. We want to hear about Mudryk getting his goal tonight, his performance. I know Tog is a big fan of Mudryk and will defend him to the end. So I'd love to hear his thoughts on Mudryk, and I'd love to hear Nicholas's thoughts as well. All of you, I'd love for you to come up and share what you think of the game, what you thought of the performance, what you think of Pochettino, what players stood out. Honestly, I need other people up here because otherwise I've got to talk for about an hour myself. So honestly, everybody, I'd love for you to come up. Please do. And I'd love to hear your views. Like I say, it was 3-2. Leeds went ahead. We came back and led 2-1. Leeds equalised and then looked like they were going to go and win the game. And we came back and managed to win. So, there we are. Louis. Yes, we want to get Louis up here somewhere, don't we? Like he's around. He's around, so we'll try and get him in at some point. I'm going to invite some people up that I know, because it's easier for me to invite people up that I know, isn't it? So I'm going to invite people up that I know. You don't have to come up, but it'd be really good if we could, so I don't have to talk for 90 minutes on my own. Here we go. Tog, my good friend. Me and Tog are in a group chat, so we talk a lot about Chelsea outside of here. We were talking during the game. Welcome, Tog. Thoughts on the game and thoughts on your favourite player?
God, how poor was that? He's got to go, man. I mean, honestly, you know, I'd rather have someone else take us to an FA Cup final than him.
Yes.
It's getting on my nerves now.
Yeah, I think he's getting on a lot of people's nerves. I think I can't explain it. I've never felt like this about a Chelsea manager. I don't know if this is how you feel, but I feel like he's just doing everything wrong.
I don't hate the guy. I think he's a really good guy. He's a really, you know, I'm sure he's a really good man manager. But there's more to football than just man management. And he's got absolutely no tactics whatsoever. What does he say to them at half-time?
I know.
What do you say to them at half-time in the cup final before the extra time started? What did he say then? I mean, he's got no idea how to win, and that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that, because the evidence is there. At the start of every half, whether it's the start of a game or half time or extra time, we always look bad. It's like we go in and then we come out again, and we're sorry, I've just got to wake up. Mm. You know, Sunday we were playing really well at the end of the match, and then we come out for the extra time and we're completely different. Mm. It's bizarre. Mm. So you're right. I think tactic. I think the thing that stands. I mean, I'm not like one of these tactico people. I'm not obsessed with fancy tactics and, you know, the JDP stuff and all these managers that everyone, the fashionable managers that everyone likes. But even I can see that that side is not coached well, and there's no tactics there. There's no there's no tactical structure for that defence, right? And so basically, you've got to be really good to make sure, or intelligent to make sure you're in the right place. Now, like the example I always give is Rudiger. Like Rudiger was when Rudiger was playing for Frank Lampard, he wasn't that great, right? He was solid, but he wasn't great, right? And because Lampard didn't really do tactical structure. Lampard's a similar kind of coach to Pochettino in terms of how they play, how they set teams up, right? And then Tuchel came in, and suddenly Rudiger looked a world beater because he had a tactical setup and he knew where he was meant to be. He knew if they were organised. You could see everyone had their role. They were well set up. And Rudiger was a world beater. And that I've got the same theory with Disasi. Like, Disasi, yeah, he was poor tonight. And like, but I think that if you put him in a proper tactical setup, like he would look brilliant. His passing's really, really good. It's always been really, really good. Like, he's like a right-footed Rudiger. Like I said that from we signed him. He was poor tonight, so criticism deserved. But yeah, it was. Oh, it's just so frustrating, you know. Like, because you can see it, and you know, there's just. He's getting away with win, got away with this win today. But if we play like that against Brentford, we're going to lose. So that's going to be fun on Saturday.
Yes, and I'll be going.
You're going? You're going to cheer Poch out, are you?
Well, I'm sitting in Brentford in, so I'll have to be careful.
Right. Well, you can banter Chelsea being a Chelsea fan in the home
in the morning. I'll be singing that.
Yeah, that's fine. Brilliant. Stay up here, Todd. Oh, and before we get on to Nicholas, I know you're a big fan of Mudrick, so how did you think he did tonight?
Oh, absolutely world class, mate. I won't have anything said against him.
Because I thought he had a really good 20 minutes, half hour in the first half, and that he scored that goal. It was a really good finish.
There is a genuine player in there. If everybody would just give him a chance, there genuinely is a great player in there. You know, you know, give him a game, 5-10 games. What have we got to lose? We're not going to win the league. We're not going to, you know, what do we want? You know, so just give him a chance.
I think it's notable that he did well under Roberto De Zerbi, who is, again, one of these tactical coaches, right? Who sets his teams up and gives them strict instructions, right? And again, he's another one that will probably thrive under a more tactically astute coach, right? Because then he knows what he's got to do and where he's got to be, and he's not, you know, getting too confused.
Yeah, and all I was saying was, it's like, I just think if you give him a run of games, he will improve. And you know, we're sitting in 10th. We're not really going to, you know, we're not going to win the league. So the expectation shouldn't be that regardless of how much money he costs, shouldn't be that you expect everything from him straight away. But he has a hard played. And I think when there is a player in there, and I really want him to have a chance over 10, 12 games. If you can do that, I think by the end of it, it'll be fantastic.
Absolutely.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fair. I did notice, though,
he played in the 10 and played very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, he created a few chances by drifting out wide a little bit and getting some balls in, and then he made some good runs. And he made a good run for the goal, really good run. That was a diagonal run.
Considering he lacks game intelligence, yeah.
Yeah, they picked him out, yeah. And I wasn't the first person to say that. Other people have said that, lots of other people have said that. But it was a really good finish. I mean, that was a really good finish. And, like, you know, fair play to him. You know, he keeps going. He keeps trying. He hasn't given up.
That's something positive, and he gets dropped. That's not helping.
Yeah, I know. That's it, isn't it? I mean, it'll be interesting to see who plays on Saturday against Brentford, which is going to be a whole different game. So, stay up here, talk for a bit. But I'm going to get Louis to speak now. Louis, were you at the game?
I was. I was indeed.
Oh, God, the atmosphere sounded awful. What was it like?
Well, I don't even know. I felt so disconnected today. I really did. You could feel the hangover from the game against Liverpool. It felt sour. It felt almost at first like an underlying level of toxicity. Not blatantly obvious.
Right.
But by the time, you know, Cole Palmer is basically having to be brought on and we're being bossed by Leeds, you really felt it. And I'll be honest, I didn't celebrate when Gallagher scored. Not because people might think, you know, oh, it means that, but there'll be some stupid, you know, because you wanted the manager sacked. I'm not even at that point. You know, as you very well know, it's just like, you change the manager, nothing's going to change at the minute. But, you know, that goal went in and I just felt relief. And then after feeling relief, I was sat there going, I actually had someone turn to me, obviously because it's a cup game, you don't have the usual suspects around. Mm-hmm. I was sat in my seat and someone goes, you need someone. No, I just feel so apathetic. I feel nothing right now. And I felt so embarrassed hearing One Step Beyond playing at the end of that. It was, look, I'm all for a late last minute winner, but, and people will say, you know, good teams grind out results when they're under the cosh, and I agree with that, but good teams also are classier and far more dynamic than a side which on paper they're supposed to be vastly superior to. You know, Daniel Farke, and I appreciate it was a very different Chelsea team 2 years ago. Tuchel was a manager for a start. We had, you know, an identity of who we were. We understood everything. But he came here with that Norwich side and we battered them 7-0. They weren't playing that. He wasn't, that lead side wasn't playing as dissimilar to that Norwich side. They're always looking for that forward pass, always looking to be on the front foot. And we just looked rubbish. I was watching that and I was going, I'm glad we're through, but that's all it is. I'm glad. I feel so disconnected from everything right now. There is when everyone's so excited and so happy around me, I just felt like I was watching them. I was going, I appreciate you beating Leeds, but I just felt nothing.
I understand it.
I was in shock.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans feel like that as well. Right now, it's really unlike anything I've ever experienced, honestly. As a fan, I've been a fan for a long time, and yeah, I was thinking about it today and how lethargic I feel about it. I felt the same as you when we scored, like relief more than anything else. It wasn't like exciting, you know, we've won. You know, got Rambles here, finally. Welcome, Rambles.
Evening, guys, how are you?
Yeah, we're all, well, pleased that we've won, I think, but that's
fucking
about...
shite, Rambles, that's how I am.
What did you think of the game, Rambles?
It was a weird game. Likewise, I didn't really kind of celebrate the goals because I just wasn't confident, even when Gallagher scored towards the end, like, I thought we were going to concede a goal. So it just wasn't a comfortable night. We were outplayed for large periods of the game. We were making a lot of mistakes. The confidence didn't look there. At the beginning, we were trying to be too clever at the back, which was leading to errors. I just found it a very uncomfortable watch. Wasn't enjoyable in the slightest.
I agree. Both times Leeds scored, I thought we were going to lose. I really did. I didn't have any confidence at all that we would come back. I felt
wrong. Almost when that third goal went, I felt wrong for not celebrating. But like I said, I just thought they'd come back into it, and they were about 3 millimeters away from doing so in the 96th minute. You know, it's like everything about it. I was just sat there. I didn't feel anything. I was just so worried constantly, and I don't understand who we are. I don't know who we're supposed to be, and I know we've won a game. I know we beat Leeds, and I know I'm supposed to be ecstatic with that. And, you know, I am happy. You know, always beating Leeds historically and usually is such a massive thing. But right now, I just feel nothing.
Yeah.
I was saying to Gary, everyone around me when I'm walking out, Celery's going, you know, we all hate Leeds, everything. And I'm just sitting there going, I just don't understand it. I don't know. Like, obviously that's who we're supposed to be, but we're not that. And to be so far from where we were in 18 months, you know, obviously we've said so many times that this club has needed change. We all agreed that, you know, we've kind of gone, you know, we need a director of football. We need to reaffirm our identity. We need to understand more of who we are. And yeah, maybe they've tried to change it. And they've done the right concepts the wrong way. And, you know, everything about it, you're just going, oh my God, like, it's just not, I just don't know how to feel, guys. I know I sound so miserable. And I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes. And you know what, normally I'd be agreeing. I'll be sitting there going, bloody hell, you just won. Relax. And I'm sure that's what my dad would be telling me as well. He's like, come on, Lou, like, have a bit of cheer about you. And like, I just feel nothing. I want the club to tell us where we're going. I want to know what the changes are. I want to know what we're getting behind. Right now, we're struggling with all of that. And it's terrifying. I think that's the word. Because we're so blind and we don't know where we are. I just feel so terrified. I don't know what is going on. And I just want to know. Just so if I need to know, I'm going to be ready for that ride for 6-7 years, which is what it could be, by the way. Now, I'm looking at Liverpool now. Before they brought in a world-class manager in Klopp, you know, we're going a similar way, guys. You know, we've got...
And this is an interesting thing, actually, Louis, which I've talked about with other people. FSG came into Liverpool in 2010, right? They had three managers in 18 months. And then in their first five seasons at Liverpool, Liverpool only finished in the top four once, right? But then they played Champions League football one season. And they bought some absolute shockers of players. They brought Christian Benteke and Mario Balotelli and Victor Moses on loan from us. They signed some awful players, really. Colo Torre, I think they signed as well. They made some really bad signings. I've shared this with other people. There's a famous video of Sky Sports when they announced that Brendan Rodgers had been sacked. And Carragher was saying a lot of things that people are now saying about Chelsea, that they're a big club, but they're not competitive anymore. They're not serious anymore. No one takes them seriously anymore. They don't win things anymore. Like, and then Thierry Henry said, like, the owners, they don't understand football. They don't understand the culture of Liverpool. They don't understand the history of Liverpool. Like, you know, this is what was being said, right? And then they promoted Michael Edwards and they appointed Jurgen Klopp but even then it took them 3.5 years to get Liverpool to be contenders, right? And they lost a few finals under Klopp, right? But they were on the right track from then on, at least, right? Because they had the right manager and the right sporting director. They had leadership. They had the right people in charge of the club who could connect them to the fans again, connect it to its soul again, right? And that is where Chelsea are now. For me, like, we're waiting for somebody to come in and grasp the club by the horns, like both hands, and say, this is Chelsea, this is who we are, this is what we want to be, this is where we're going to go, and I'm going to take you there. Like, and it doesn't have to be somebody who's been at Chelsea before, it could be somebody who's never been at Chelsea but is built for Chelsea. Like, Klopp had never been at Liverpool before, but he just somehow understood the club. Right, some managers are made for certain clubs. I believe that. Like, Mourinho is absolutely ready-made for Chelsea. Right, Tuchel is the same. Some managers are just built for certain clubs. Some managers aren't. Like, Sarri was never, to me, was never a Chelsea manager. Pochettino is not a Chelsea manager.
See, I was thinking about...
And I think that's what we're waiting for. And I think I know who that person should be. Whether we get them or not is a different thing. But Rambles, yeah.
I think that's about this before. The most enjoyable Chelsea team for me in recent years was the Antonio Conte team, because the team had structure. We knew kind of... Everyone was playing in the right positions. Now, we had we had Costa, Hazard, Pedro and Willian. And Costa and Hazard started every game, and Pedro and Willian rotated, you know, as and when. Yeah. And, you know, the team had structure. We knew players playing in the right position. And ever since Hazard's gone, we've never... The attack's always been such a mess. One week it was Werner playing on the left. Then it was Pulisic.
Yeah.
Then it was Werner through the middle. Then Giroud through the middle. Now we have the same... Mudrick's a 10-1 game. He doesn't play the next game. Then Sterling plays as a false nine. Then the next week, Jackson's playing as a nine.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you need some kind of, you know, a manager needs to have the same front three week in, week out, and allow them to build relationships. Because, you know, Madueke starts his first game in 6 games. He has a bad game. Then he doesn't play for another 3 or 4 games. Then he comes in, he has another bad game. You know, players need to be playing consistently to build confidence, to build form, to form understandings with other players. Yeah. And it just feels like such a disjointed mess.
But to even do that, Rambles, like, I mean, I don't envy Pochettino at all. You know, like I said in the pod, in the preview, you know, I feel that he's a good coach. Now, I get what you're saying. He's not a Chelsea coach. I agree. I think his mentality is all wrong. But then if you look at everything around him, no matter who comes in to grab this club by the horns, Storm made the point perfectly. It needs to be in the right structure. You need the right people. You need the football brains. And no matter who comes in, you could put, you know, the greatest coaches of all time in Chelsea right now. You could put Bill Shankly. You could put Mourinho. You could put Ancelotti. You could put Fergie. You could put Pep. But they don't have the structure around them. And people will say, well, you know, just put in a good manager, you'll see. Yeah, but you look at three times previous, I say, look at Tuchel. Tuchel had autonomy. He had people around him. He went, you know what you're doing. We trust you. This lot, it's children, quite frankly, who've been plucked. And I think, again, Scott put it perfectly like that. It's almost like we've given them scholarships. You know, Win Stanley and Stewart. Oh, you guys do really good. We really believe that we can help you. We bring in someone else from Brighton. Oh, well, they can help the sporting directors really achieve the club's goals. No. These sporting directors should be the ones pushing the club in the right direction. They are not. Literally this morning, when we read stuff, again, it's the ownership who don't know what they're doing. You read it again. We're linked with an 18-year-old from Flamengo with a £100 million release clause. Sorry, what? This whole sticking with youth and all of that, you've mentioned it perfectly. Madueke comes in, has a poor game, right? And he's absolutely thrown under the bus. He's 21 years of age. I was in a space yesterday, and they were talking about, oh, well, you know, I think that Madueke and Mudrick wouldn't get into most Premier League teams. You know what? Probably. That's because they're kids. Mudrick's 23, they'll say. Well, yeah, he had 80 like games of senior football before he moved to the Premier League for a massive fee and wasn't ready. If he was a player that came through the academy, people would say, give him time, let him do his thing. But because we've thrown £85 million at a child which isn't ready, and I feel stupid saying he's a child, but this is the mentality of how the club that bringing in. They're bringing in kids to say, we'll mould them for the future. These players won't be here. This isn't buying a house. This isn't spending 200, 300 grand on a flat and then waiting for it to earn more money in the future. It doesn't work like that. We are in, there's no, even you could put whoever you want in the squad. I know you want Amorim, right? I'm not going to lie. Every single, you know, Portuguese sort of fan I spoke to said he's a good coach. He's much like a Marco Silva, you know, the next big thing, and he'd probably be good like a Europa League team, right? And it remains to be seen. If he comes in, he does amazing, I'll bite your hand off, because it'd be amazing to CKL's competing again. But you bring him in now, he's walking into a shitstorm. Any manager that comes in now they're coming in, they're getting their paycheck, and guess what? When they get sacked, if something doesn't go right, they're walking away with their whatever they get. And it's money down the toilet until they admit they've done something wrong, this ownership and those sporting directors. Until they do that, nothing is going to change.
I said for a while that sporting directors need to be changed. I mean, there's got to be some accountability. Like, you know, I've heard there's been reports that, you know, everyone gets assessed in the summer, like the manager, the sporting directors, everyone, right? What sporting directors, and I won't say names because I don't want to get in trouble, but a certain the one that everyone criticizes the most is a bit of a suck up, and has sucked up to Benedict Bali and got in his favor, which is why he's still in the job. But there's still people saying that he could get held accountable for the bad signings. So I mean, like, we've got to, like, I mean, like today, man, you see him, Michael Edwards linked with Liverpool, and they're just pushing all the boats out to get him. And I'm like, this is what we should be doing, right? Can we act like a big club, please? Like, we're not flipping mid-table, small club. We are Chelsea Football Club, right? We're a big club. Let's act like a big club and act and be serious. I'm tired of us acting like a mid-table club, honestly. And it's because we're run by mid-table people. Like, you know, the sporting directors are from mid-table clubs, right? They're not from big clubs. Well, they don't have big club experience, so they're not winners. They're not leaders, right? They're not. That's the problem at the club overall, in the coaching staff, and in the sporting directors. There's no leaders, right? There's no one like taking responsibility and making big decisions and serious decisions and getting things done. That is the problem throughout the whole club on the men's side. On the women's side, it's fine because you've got actual leaders in charge of that. You've got Paul Green, you've got Emma Hayes, right? They know what they're doing. They don't need anyone to help them, right? They're doing it on themselves. They've been winning every season for goodness knows how long now, right? But we haven't got that on the men's side, and that's what we need, and it needs to be sorted out. And something has to be done, and we have to make our voices heard to get it done, if that's what it takes, because this is our club, and it's a proud club. We have to take, you know, we have to do what we can do, obviously ethically and legally, to get it done. I'm really sorry to Nicholas because I was about to let him up, and we got into this big discussion, and now he's gone. So I'm sorry, Nicholas.
Listen, I'll shut my chops and I'll get off. But guys, please, I mean, you know, obviously Score and Rambles wouldn't need to get involved, so. Please, everyone, just request. If you've got something you want to say, please say it and be patient. That was my fault that Nicholas went, but I'm going now. So, you know, just come and get involved in the conversation.
Appreciate it, Louis, always as ever. And I'll catch you soon.
Take care, Louis.
Take care, guys. Ta-da.
Rambles, I know you've got some thoughts on that structure stuff as well. What were your kind of thoughts before we get to Frank?
I mean, I think we need someone at the helm who's been a big club, who's managed the team, ideally who's won silverware. So, you know, if he wanted to go someone foreign, there's Paolo Maldini who's out of work, then obviously we could maybe try and make an offer for Michael Edwards again, although it probably is unlikely because he's either going to stay as he is or go to Liverpool. Otherwise, there's Frank Lampard. He knows the club. He's been at the club a long time, and he knows what a championship-winning team needs.
Yeah, now, exactly. He does. Yes.
I have no doubt. Paul Winstanley is clearly very, very good at what he does. And, you know, he's got a very good track record at Brighton, but he's never been responsible for building or help building a team which competes for major honours. And you just need someone who's knows what you need. You need that blend, youth, experience, you know.
Well, 100%. Captains. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And there's a guy that I've talked about in one of my articles who has linked with Chelsea before, actually, who was the CEO of Red Bull Leipzig, during their rise up the divisions and then to getting second in the Bundesliga. And then he's become the CEO of Red Bull Football, again, very successfully. And now he's also, on top of that, he's now the CEO of Red Bull Racing, right? So this is a guy that's run very successful sporting operations, big sporting operations, knows what it takes. He's run an organisation that, a bit like what Chelsea want to do with Bluco, which is build a network of clubs, all feeding into Chelsea, right? So he's done all of that. He's been at winning teams in sport. He's a leader. His name is Oliver Mintzlaff. He's been linked with Chelsea. He's very, very good at what he does. He's a leader. He's not a sporting director, but but he is someone who will provide leadership and a winning mentality. And is well respected in sport generally, not just in football. He's well respected in football, but he's well respected in all sport. And would give some authority and leadership at the top, and would be able to advise the ownership better on how to run an elite sporting organization. He'd be able to create an elite performance like culture, high performance culture. That's what we don't have at Chelsea, right? He was at Leipzig when Julian Nagelsmann was the head coach, so he knows him, right? So he knows about hiring good coaches. That was just an idea that I had. I mean, there's loads of other people you could pick, but that's the kind of person that I want us to go for. Someone who is right at the top of the game, a proven leader, like who's experienced and respected, and will provide leadership and will help our owners understand how football works and how big football clubs work. And that's what we need, I think, as well, obviously, the new manager as well. And yes, I am a fan of Aaron Rim. I'm going to be writing an article on him soon. So you'll find out more about what I think of him. But Frank, what are your thoughts on the game today?
Hey, thank you. Yeah, so, pretty bad second half. And I'm not even going to talk about Poch anymore, because we all know who he is and how he's going to run the team. He's just tactically dead. I mean, there's no tactics in this team. It's just, imagine a team in championship comes to Stamford Bridge and they know exactly what to do and they know how to make Chelsea get into trouble, you know. And that's bad. That's really bad if you're Pochettino, when a championship team comes to your home and then they know exactly what to do because you're tactically so exposed. It's getting ridiculous at this point. Good win. I mean, always. I'm not that kind of person that would wish the team to lose just because I hate the coach. But you know what? Good for Conor Gallagher, because I know he had like a really bad game and then he missed all these chances to come in and then score such a goal with confidence. That's good for him. It shows his mentality. But just to add what you guys been saying about this ownership, which I think at this point they're becoming the issue, right? We were told when they bought the club that they were chosen because they had the best strategy on how to run the club, right? That's what we were told. And then, obviously, after almost 2 years of them in charge, we haven't seen any strategy yet. And I'm afraid, I know we keep talking about what's the strategy. I'm afraid to tell you guys that these owners don't know what to do. Like, they don't have any strategy. They just came in and then I'm not sure what they're thinking about. They thought this was like FIFA or something, that they don't understand the game. I understand they're businessmen. They've made a lot of money. I understand some of them own, you know, American, you know, baseball and basketball. But this is different. This is Premier League. This is European football. You come in, they have yet to hire someone as a sporting director to take charge of the club. They have yet to do that. You know, they've hired like bunch of directors to like fight against each other. How is that going to help the club? How is that going to, you know, draw any strategy for the club? How is that going to help with recruiting? Because if each director says, I want that player, or no, that player is better, then what the heck is going on? What is this? They haven't learned that yet. They just came in. They splashed a lot of money, which I respect, you know, like they splashed a lot of money, but they did it in such a bad way that they put the team right now in a very bad position, because now you have a bunch of players on 6, 7, 8 years contracts, and some of them are not even that good. You know, imagine like Sanchez. This guy shouldn't even be in the club, but he's like, what, on a 6, 7 years contract? It's just it's getting at the point where this team is not going anywhere until the owners come up with a strategy, hire someone like you guys been saying, an experienced director, take charge of the footballing decisions, and go from there. Because until that happens, nothing is going to happen. And one thing I want to add, we were told they had the best strategy to build a new stadium. And this is something that I understand, a very complicated situation with Chelsea, just because you have owners and stuff. But even they knew that, but they have yet to give us any plan, any updates. They promise they're going to be open-minded, they're going to be open and then they're going to be updating us, they're going to be talking to us.
Yeah.
But they haven't even told us what their plan for the stadium is.
I think that's
so
because
the club is just in a mess.
It's a complicated, I hear what you're saying. You know, you make some valid points. I think with the stadium, it's a very complicated thing. They've bought the stall land next to the stadium, right? So that's one thing that they have done. And the plan, I guess, would be that gives you more space to build a slightly bigger stadium and also to have a kind of a fan park kind of near right next to the stadium. I think that would be their plan if they did that. But again, it's like that. It's a difficult thing because you've got to come up with a plan and it's got to get approved by the Chelsea pitch owners. It's got to get, and then, you know, then there's the whole thing of, do we stay at Stamford Bridge or do we, which means we'd have to go away for like 3 or 4 years while it's built, or do we move to Earls Court, which is very close by. I mean, it's the same part of London, and it's the same journey basically for a lot of people, or stay at Stamford Bridge until that's completed. It's like, I think that's Roman Abramovich couldn't even solve that problem, you know, and that was, and you know, it's a very difficult one. Well, the person who does that is going to be, the person who solves that problem is going to be an absolute saint, because it's very, very difficult to solve, you know, because of where Stamford Bridge is. It's a very difficult thing to solve, but I definitely hear you on the criticism. I think there is a plan. Like, I've written articles about this. I think the plan, and it's a long-term plan, and we're not really seeing it yet, but they want to, I think they want to put Chelsea at the centre of a network of clubs, which is akin to like the Red Bull network. So they want to have, I don't know, 4 or 5 clubs, which buy players, good talented players cheap, and the best ones go to Chelsea, and the other ones get sold for profit, so that those clubs are all profitable, and Chelsea get top players really cheap. And obviously they still buy big players, but they don't have to buy as many big players. They don't have to spend as much on elite players, because they're getting a stream of talent from this network of clubs around them. I think that's the vision. Like, I think the execution has been poor, and I think part of that is because of the people that they've hired to do it, which is the sporting directors and also the head coaches as well. I don't think they've hired head coaches very well so far. But I can understand. Graham Potter was the hottest property in football, one of the hottest properties around when people hired him. He was getting talked about for Manchester City. He was getting talked about for England. So you can understand somebody going for him in that situation, but he's not a Chelsea man. He wasn't a Chelsea manager. Again, he's probably a good manager, but he's not a Chelsea manager. And the owners probably should have known that, right? So, yeah, good points, absolutely. We did have Nicholas back again, but he's gone. So
I can see what you're saying about the, you know, they do kind of want to copy the Red Bull model.
Yeah, that's why I said that guy recommended that works at Red Bull now, because like he knows the model, right? He knows what we're trying to do, and he's done it, and he's run it. And it just makes sense to me that you would have someone who's a best in class person from that organization. And to be fair to Lawrence Stewart, people criticize him. He's worked for Red Bull. That's one of the reasons he was hired, because of his knowledge of the Red Bull network and, you know, how that operates. And that's why they tried to get, the guy we did get. Christopher Val, you know, from Red Bull, because of his knowledge of the Red Bull network. That didn't work out, sadly, for whatever reason, we don't know. But But that makes sense, you know, to get someone from Red Bull who's worked there and knows how it works to help us replicate that. That, you know, and yeah, and they did try to get Michael Edwards in July, I think July, August 2022, when they first took over. They made him a massive offer. And it's a very similar offer that he's getting from Liverpool now, which is basically to run the whole thing, like the whole football side. You know, not just Chelsea, but the multi-club, everything. Like, that was the job they offered him. And he was, unfortunately, he was committed to his family at that point. And so we had to go elsewhere, which is really unlucky. I mean, that's just bad luck, really, bad timing, because he was very impressed by Chelsea. And, you know, we could still offer him that now. I mean, if we appointed Michael Edwards into that role right now, it'd be the best news that Chelsea have had for a long time, right? So if that suddenly happened, that Chelsea appointed Michael Edwards as CEO of football for Bluco and Chelsea, that would change everything. It would change everything overnight. Absolutely would change everything. Or even this guy that I talked about before from Red Bull. You need a big appointment like that. Like Man United got with the guy from Man City. Like a statement appointment in one of those positions. And we haven't made a statement appointment in one of those positions. Or as a manager, really. Like, you know, so it's there's a lot of things that are difficult, and, you know, I hope we can fix them all. So I'm going to bring up BTNT to get his views. We'll hear about Chelsea 4. We did play a football match today, didn't we? Chelsea 3, Leeds 2. So BTNT, what are your views on the game and on Chelsea generally?
Well, thanks for having me on, by the way, guys. I hope everybody's doing well.
Yeah, welcome, buddy.
Yeah, welcome.
Everybody sort of mentioned a bunch of the topics that are on my mind. I dislike it when somebody goes, oh, we change the manager, it will change this, or we do this, it will change that. It's like, there are issues throughout the club that have existed also pre Luco and these kind of things. Like,
absolutely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I say this sort of with our Champions League win. I fucking loved it. I'm trying to avoid swearing and everything. I absolutely loved it. But if I looked at our winning it, I didn't think we were the best team in Europe. I think we deserved to win the trophy because we won those games. You know, it's not like we won them through some refereeing horrible decisions and everything. We deserved to win that trophy and all these kind of things. But at the end of it, I didn't look and go, we're the best team. There were a number of players that had been past their best, that needed replacing. We rose to the occasion, but I wouldn't say we were the best team. It's also sort of with when we're talking, I mean, because I forgot who it was, if it was Ramble or Score that was talking about, and Edwards, because yeah, we were going for him as well. So I just like when at times people go, oh yeah, but Liverpool are now going in for Edwards, we're the big team, we should be going, like, yeah, we have been in for him. And I wouldn't be surprised if we try to go in for him again. But it seems to be very much the case that he's just right now not taking these things. That he's just concentrating on his family and stuff, which is, you know, it's a respectful decision. So I'm not going to criticize for that. Family is first. But yeah, when somebody goes, oh, we need this manager, that manager, is it going to change that much? I mean, Amorim, I feel at times certain people, and again, it's not about people here, you know, hosts, co-hosts, or speakers, or listeners, or whatever. But it's sort of the new shiny toy, essentially, a bit at times. Which is, oh, if we get Amorim, it will solve it. Will it? I could just as well imagine us getting Amorim in the summer, and we're having this exact same conversation then in October. I wouldn't be surprised. It is a thing that I believe the new ownership has that plan that is supposed to be relatively long term. Now, whether we like it or not, I think that's irrelevant to them in terms of what they care about. But like, if you know the business model of that company, it's buying companies that are undervalued and selling them, or building them up and then selling them for a profit, essentially. So if there's a couple of failures, those guys won't care about it. So by the end, when they're selling it, they'll make profit. Yeah, there's... Sorry, somebody saying something?
If I hear the phrase, that's unflattering, one more
pillow. Wait, somebody's speaking right now?
I think that's somebody in the background. I don't know what that is.
Ah, okay. I just...
If we turn the microphones off, then maybe we'll put some more.
Well, I'll try to keep this very quickly then. But, yeah, I mean, some of the new signings, I mean, we're talking about potential quite often. And with a lot of them, I see potential. But, again, as we've all talked about, not the finished product. And we would like a bit more experience in this team. I think that's sort of something that everybody agrees on. I don't want to say everybody, that most Chelsea fans agree upon, that we want a bit more experience, that I can also lead these younger players. So, again, I live in Switzerland, so you can imagine why I have this wishy-washy attitude of neutrality and everything. I think that sort of things have to improve, things have to change, but I don't think that change for the sake of change is going to mean improve. Like, Pochettino hasn't been impressing me so far, but I'm also not going to think, I don't believe that simply because we bring in Amorim or Nagelsmann or something, that suddenly we're going to become a great team. I think that there are various elements that, even if we bring a sort of a Michael Edwards and everything, I think it's Michael Edwards, sort of Liverpool guy, even we bring him in, it's going to take a while for him to build a team like he did at Liverpool. He didn't come in and suddenly Liverpool were fantastic. Klopp didn't suddenly come in and Liverpool were fantastic. I mean, even Pep Guardiola with City, the team was built or began to be built for him before he even came in with a number of signings. He came in, he spent a fair amount of money. The first need he finished third, where we won the title under Antonio Conte. And then he spent like something like 200 million on defenders. And then they had their centurion, I think it was. So with all of it, it takes time. Are we underperforming, I think, for the money we've spent and the new attempts at infrastructure? Yes. Do we have a lot of young players that need time developing? Yes. Is it going to take time to build a club model? Yes. And does this mean it's going to work? No. I mean, I see a plan from the new ownership or the directors and everything. Does that mean it's going to be a working plan? I don't know. Maybe in 2 years' time we'll go, Jesus, okay, we suffered for a while, but we got there. Maybe we'll look in 2 years' time going, Jesus, this all fell to absolute shite. So, yeah, that's sort of a bit where I'm standing. But, yeah, I'm always a bit sort of nervous. If there's supposed to be change, I want to feel relatively comfortable it's change for the better, not just change because we don't like where we are right now. If you guys understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do agree with a lot of what you say. For me, one of the most important things is I think we need a manager who builds a rapport with the fan base, who tries to get the fans on side. Because I think when you've got a manager who the fans are behind, I think it makes it so much easier when you're going through difficult spells. Now, when you look at Klopp at Liverpool, he lost his first three finals, but the fans could see what he was trying to do and the fans were supportive. Whereas at Pochettino, he's made little to no effort to connect with the fans. And he doesn't help himself with what he says.
I think with him also, like, Klopp like excited the fans. It wasn't just that the report came from the excitement, I'd say.
Yeah, that, I think.
It's a bit like Dara said with Spurs and Ange Postecoglou. Like when they were losing against us with that 4-1 game, I think it was, yeah, and yeah, they had two players sent off. I mean, it's a question about also supporters, of course, because I imagine if Ange was a Chelsea manager, and you know situations was flipped, and it was us with nine players, people would absolutely crucify him for not playing conservatively. But the Spurs supporters were going, we're enjoying this again after the years of Antonio Conte and Mourinho, and you know, Spurs, Antonio Conte, Spurs, Mourinho, the suffering that they felt like, oh Jesus, I can't watch this anymore, and they were just happy to enjoy the football even if it didn't end results.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's a good point. And Chelsea haven't had a manager like that, where I think the last manager I felt like that about was Frank Lampard, honestly. Like I was, even when we lost, I felt like I was enjoying it. You know, it was, and I felt like we were going somewhere. You know, like you felt like with all the academy players that you brought through, you felt, and they were all improving all the time and they were getting games, and you felt like you were going somewhere. You felt the team was developing. You felt like there was a purpose, there was a direction. You know, you could see it happening in front of you. There was, it was really, really clear.
But the last successful attacking manager that we had, you know, some winning trophies as well, I'd say, would be Ancelotti.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was.
Since him, or even before him, who's the last manager that had, I'm not a big fan of the term, but sort of that attacking philosophy? Who's the last one we had that was also successful?
I'd say Vialli, actually. Vialli had a pretty attacking philosophy.
He did,
yeah. I mean, but yeah, we're talking about a while with it.
Well, that's 25 years ago.
That's what I mean. You know, this is when I was a little kid and that stuff.
Yeah, I was what? Yeah. I was about 20 years old at that point. I was about 15 years younger than that.
It
was great, that team. Because that team had Zola with he gave the magic. He was, you know, he was basically the Hazard of that team. And then you had Di Matteo, you had Desai, you had Poirier. There was a lot of characters in that team. There were a lot of personalities, like a lot of charisma.
It does lead itself to the question that, because I hear often people saying we are Chelsea, you know, sort of, oh, this is unacceptable, we are Chelsea. What does that mean? In its knee-jerk sort of phrasing, it means we're winners, and which, you know, we can't deny that we've been a very successful team over the last 20 years, or a bit before that as well.
For me, when I say this, we're Chelsea, I don't. That's not what it means for me. Winning is part of who we are, but it's not. An identity of a football club is not just about winning. When you talk about the soul of a football club, you know, it's more than that. I mean, like Chelsea.
Wouldn't you say that for a lot of younger supporters, that is what it is?
Yeah,
I mean,
an ongoing problem with Chelsea is that you have different generations of fans who have different experiences of Chelsea. Like for me, well, I started supporting Chelsea when I was 10 years old. Like we got relegated the first season I supported Chelsea, and then we got promoted the second season with 99 points, and then we were kind of mid-table for. We finished fifth, I think. Then after that, but then we were kind of mid-table for like four or five years, you know, and the Glenn Hoddle arrived. We were still mid-table, but we got to a cup final, and everyone was talking about us again because we had Glenn Hoddle, and he was a big name. And then we got to the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final with a squad that really wasn't good enough to get to a Cup Winners' Cup semi-final. And then you had Ruud Gullit and Mark Hughes arrive, and you know that was the start of really Chelsea's rise in the late 90s, and Chelsea started winning things, right? And then you had Ruud Gullit as manager and sexy football, and I mean, like,
because we've had a very sort of a fractured history in that sense, like in comparison, because we're talking about sort of Michael Edwards and Klopp, right? The essence of the club, even when they weren't winning, stayed essentially the same. I claim. I mean, good. We can talk about the history of that team in terms of passing back to the goalkeeper and everything before the back pass was the law was changed that the goalkeeper couldn't pick it up. So back in the 70s, 80s, and that. But well, changed in 92 actually, or 94. But the essence of that team has always been pretty much the same, even when they haven't been successful. Whereas Chelsea, what is the philosophy of Chelsea Football Club?
I mean, Chelsea had never had a football philosophy. Like, I mean, in the 70s, Chelsea had just always been a glamour club, right? And in like the 70s, team played really good football. Really good football, attacking football, passing football, stylish. You had flair players like Charlie Cook, who was like, you know, the Eden Hazard, Zola kind of player for that team. And you had Alan Hudson, who was like a Fabregas type player. You know, you had all these. Chelsea have always been, for me, like the Chelsea football philosophy is like power, intensity, pace, energy, but also with a bit of flair and a bit of magic. Like, you know, so you have
that
flair.
That's sort of a bit what I'm sort of, you know, because we switch managers of different styles so regularly over the last 20 years I'm talking sort of, I mean, I'm part of that relatively newer generation. I'm in my 30s. So, you know, I started supporting Chelsea a bit before Abramovich came about, but not long before. Over in Switzerland, it was always difficult to watch these games when I always had to head to the pub with my father to watch the games. Him being a Wolves fan is also always a complex thing. But yeah, sort of the nature of, you know, you look at your Mourinho's, you know, your Andres Villas Boas, and at one point then your Ancelotti's, then Antonio Conte's, your Sarri's. You know, it's always been a very changing club in its playing style. And
absolutely, I think that's true. It is. I think there's always Chelsea's more of a, doesn't have a football philosophy. It's just a, it's a kind of almost a personality thing. It's like Chelsea. What I always wanted in a Chelsea manager, for example, right, is I want a Chelsea team. It's a bunch of players that will fight for the fans, fight for the club. You know, we'll give everything on the pitch. We'll play with a bit of flair and a bit of magic, but also just, you know, not be afraid to get stuck in if they need to. We'll never stop giving everything till the end. And, you know, we'll do what it takes to win.
That's part of the thing, isn't it? Because, like, I mean, if we talk about the last great flair player we had, proper great, of course, would be Eden Hazard,
yeah.
Since then, have we had a proper flair player?
No, we haven't. And that's
and
the thing.
Strikers, like, also, since Diego Costa, I mean, Morata, I think he's a relatively silky footballer at times, but he lacked, dare I say,
an absolute bastard up front, like a fighter, a warrior, you know, someone who leads the line, someone who scores goals, someone who's got
personality. That's the Diego Costa, what I mean. It's like he had that dog in him. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Opponents
yeah.
used to hate him, and we loved that they hated him because he was a bastard.
Always have that kind of player up front, right? You had Costa, you had Drogba, you had Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who is my favourite Chelsea striker ever.
Very underrated, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
Oh, he was amazing. I think he was world class, especially in his first couple of seasons with us. Unbelievable player. And then you had Bielsa, you had Viali as well, Mark Hughes, you know, these warriors up front. And then alongside them, you'd have the flair players, Eden Hazard, Zola. Like, you know, you'd have the Cesc Fabregas, you know, players like that, like he would produce a bit of magic. Even Frank Lampard, to a certain extent, like Michael Ballack, you know, you have these kind of players. Iron Robin, right? Damien Duff, Joe Cole, you know. So you'd have the kind of, they had the flair and you'd have the power. And that was kind of what Chelsea was, you know.
It's one of the reasons that I actually really would like the signing of Tony. I just think that guy's got a level of attitude.
Tony is a Chelsea striker. He's a Chelsea striker. He absolutely would fit in like an absolute glove, honestly.
Yeah, he can score goals, but he's always happy to also help others score. Like, we talk about Didier Drogba. Like, Didier Drogba, that's, you know, we love him for what he did, but it's not like he was, you know, an out-and-out goal scorer. You know, he had an all-round game.
He wasn't. That's the thing that he had, but he showed up on the big occasions, right? And he had the dog in him. Like, players were scared of him, like, to play against him. And even if he didn't score, he laid off goals for other people. Like, Frank Lampard got a ton of goals, right? We all know about Frank Lampard. You know, when we had wingers playing alongside him, we would get goals like Joe Cole and Robin and like Malouda and like Anelka even kind of almost played as a winger next to him, although he's like a second striker.
Malouda was criminally underrated, I always thought.
I love Malouda. Malouda was fantastic.
But like, if we're talking about that sort of Ivan Tony, like, I think, for example, he'd bring out a lot more in Nkunku, for example, because Nkunku had his best times as that second striker behind the other player, but
that's why I was so happy we signed him, because when Nkunku's fully fit and in form, he is that magic player. Like, he can be like the Zola, Hazard, you know, Robin, Joe Cole kind of player, right? And make something out of nothing. He can score goals. And he plays off a striker. You put him next to Ivan Tony.
It's not simply make something out of nothing. It's because somebody else, like an Ivan Tony, pulls the players away. Allow him that space to do his thing.
Ivan Tony would be a talisman for Chelsea if he joined us. He'd become a talisman overnight.
Attitude. I mean, just the way he walks up to penalties.
Yeah, exactly. The way he holds himself. That's what you want in a Chelsea striker, right? Anyone who knows, if you understand Chelsea, you understand that Ivan Tony is absolutely ready made for Chelsea Football Club. Like,
he's got a bit of a nasty bastard streak in him, hasn't he?
He has, and that's what Chelsea need. Like, that's what Chelsea Nook teams have.
It's not just what we need, it's what we enjoy. Like, we love being hated Chelsea by other teams.
Tony. They would love him.
Yes, love I agree 100%. And aside from the price tag of, you know, Osimhen, which a lot of people mention, the fact is, Osimhen is, I'd say, pretty much a goal scorer. You're not going to get the other side of the game.
Yeah,
from
Osimhen. I agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you look at that and go, well, okay, if you have that kind of striker, what you need around him is players that essentially work as purely suppliers, pretty much. Unless you have players of a level of quality like City have, where there can be suppliers and goal scorers. And I look at, like, as I say, Nkunku, he's more of a goal scorer. Modric, I don't think he's much of a supplier. Again, I think he's more of a goal scorer. I look at Madueke, he's a bit more in between. But again, like, you know, you have these wingers that cut inside and score goals, these kind of things. But the one player that I'd say would function quite heavily or would do very well as a supplier would be Palmer.
Palmer scores and he creates. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, but like the rest are more goal scorers in that sense, like in their play style. You know, we can talk about the quality of their finishing and these kind of things. That's fine.
Yeah,
but that's what their instinct is. Like, Modric is more of a finisher in his play style. Madueke a bit of a 50-50. Sterling, more of a finisher than a facilitator, and all this kind of thing. And so if Oscar is supposed to work, he would have the wings would have to function as suppliers for him.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, this is all really interesting. Right? I think I think we kind of agree on a lot of things. I think there's a lot of potential at Chelsea, and there's a lot of things that need doing at Chelsea. And I think all of us have good ideas about what that could look like, you know. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few months, and obviously the next few weeks as well. And you know,
could I ask a quick question?
We need to win really soon, but yes.
Just sort of, what positions do you guys sort of, you Score, Rambo, and Echo sort of look at being, these are the priority positions? If I'd limit you to like two, let's say, what are the positions that you'd go, these are the priority ones above all others?
Well, number one would be striker for me. I think we've talked about that already. Who I would sign in that position, and then I think it'll be either another attacker or a left back. I think we do need another left back, because really we've only got Chilwell at the moment, and you know, Cucurella is probably being sold, and Madsen is being sold, and so we need somebody in that position who can, you know, because Chilwell can't be fit all the time, and he's obviously in his late 20s now, so you need someone slightly younger but also able to come in straight away.
So would you prefer a left back to like a winger?
You see, that's the thing. I can't decide. I think we need both.
It's why I have to give prescriptions on this answer. Otherwise, everybody would go up a new starting 11, going from Mbappe down to Haaland to everybody.
Rambles, what do you think? What two positions do you think we need to get?
I think we do need a striker, desperately. But then I'm torn. We need a centre back, because we're probably going to have a new manager, so we could be playing three at the back system. And we need another left back, and we need another winger.
Yeah.
But make a choice. Now we're theoretically talking about going for the three at the back, assuming we don't right now. We stay with the four at the back and everything. So you said striker, centre back, left back, winger. Which would be your priority?
I would go striker and left back.
So we're kind of in agreement there, Ambles. Interesting.
I do think our wingers, under a better manager, I do think they could be coached to become more consistent.
If we talk about Amorim, I think Mudrick would play a... Amorim often does is one of his wing backs is more attacking and one of them is slightly more defensive. So I think what he might do is play Mudrick as a left wing back. And I think with his pace... And given the right tactical instructions, it could be really, really good in that role. His crossing is excellent, generally.
I heard Andy Brassel talk about Modric, and he put it in a very good point where he said Modric seems like the kind of player that just needs a month or something of intensive one-on-one training with the manager. To improve his own game. And I think that very much sums it up very well. He's a player that has the raw ability, but a player that looks at times lost on the pitch because he doesn't quite know where he should be. And I think that leads at times to him not doing anything because he's thinking, wait, am I supposed to be over there or here? Am I supposed to track? Like, he just seems the kind of player that, give him a month with one-on-one coaching with a manager full-time, this is sort of theoretical, not practical, of course, but one-on-one coaching consists for a month just to go, look, do this, then this, then this, then now you move here. And
that's why, that's where a good pre-season comes in, you know, like...
He just needs an incredibly solid, intensive pre-season.
Yeah.
And I think then you could find, again, should that be under Potter? Poch? Another question. He's not going to be under Potter, is it? Should that be under Poch? Another question. But yeah, it just seems like the kind of player that has all the tools.
Absolutely.
Doesn't know how to use them.
And one other thing, I'm going to go back to the game now, just to briefly, because we're going to finish soon. This has been a really good space, by the way. I really appreciate everyone's contribution. BTNT, honestly, fantastic stuff. Really, really, really smart stuff. But I had a message from Louis earlier. But Sterling, Raheem Sterling, when he came off, he got booed when he came off. Not as bad as he's been booed before, but nevertheless, he was booed off. He was apparently walking around again when he didn't have the ball, which seems to be a pattern with him. He keeps saying that he's committed to Chelsea. I don't see that. He does get goals and he does get assists, so he's contributing in that sense. But for an experienced player, I think he needs to be doing more. But so that's another thing that came out of today. But this has been a really good conversation. I think it's good to hear a lot of Chelsea fans who are genuinely concerned about the club and want the best for the club, want the best off the pitch, on the pitch, want us to really find our soul again, find out, remember who we are, rediscover who we are again. I think some clubs go through this. It's not just Chelsea that have been through this. Like, Liverpool went through this for a while before Klopp arrived. Like, Man United have had this problem, you know. Even Arsenal, to a certain extent, had this problem for a bit.
Finished, you know, twice eighth under Emery, not Emery, current manager, Arteta. Yeah, finished eighth under him before they started challenging for top
four. They had their worst run of form for 40 years. Like, you know, and their worst start since the 60s or something. Like, one of their worst starts ever. I think that a couple of seasons ago, they started with three successive defeats. You know, they were bottom of the Premier League. People were worried they were going to get relegated. You know, so and this was
I believe the then he was there. A game away from potentially getting the sack. I think if he'd lost,
and guess who kept him in a job? Good old Charity FC doing our
always so predictable.
Yeah, are
you talking about the FA Cup final that kept him in the job when Lampard?
No. It was the next season. We played them at the Emirates, and they were like in the bottom half, I think, and like they hadn't won for like ten games or something. And Chelsea, well, we were kind of near the top of the league at that point under Lampard. We go there, and they played He changed his team for that game. He played a bunch of kids instead of the players he'd been playing. And, of course,
we're Robin Hoodie. We rob from the poor and give to the rich. We're Robin Hoodie.
The story was that he was gonna, if he lost that, he would have got sacked and they would have appointed Tuchel. Because Tuchel had just been sacked by PSG, right? Or was just about to be sacked by PSG. That was some stuff that was going around. Which is really interesting, because imagine if he'd been sacked and Tuchel had gone to Arsenal, and what would have happened when we sacked Lampard? You know, how that would have affected Chelsea history? You know, it's a really kind of interesting, like, what if situation there. Like, if Chelsea had won that game, would Arteta be a manager anymore? You know, what would happen to his managerial career?
Then we can also question, would we have won that Champions League?
Yeah, would we have done? But would that have been a bad thing or a good thing? You know, we were looking at Ralf Rangnick as an interim. I think what would have happened actually is that Rangnick would have come in as an interim, and that we'd have got Nagelsmann that summer. Because we really wanted Nagelsmann. He was at Red Bull. Although Nagelsmann went to Bayern that summer, so maybe we wouldn't. But I don't know. But we just never know now, do you? It's just really interesting what could have happened and would.
Funny
have
enough, I was having a similar conversation with one of my Chelsea friends before, and I was saying how kind of individual moments change like 5-10 year history period. You know, if you look at
Hazard was going to go to Manchester United, but obviously Drogba scored the Champions League winning penalty and he ended up coming to Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, did you hear him on that podcast recently?
Then if you look, we could have signed Haaland and he actually wanted to come, but we wouldn't pay the agent fees. Oh. So Haaland ended up going to Manchester City.
But it's always someone to consider.
They backed Lampard that summer. And so we wouldn't have signed, if they'd backed Lampard, we wouldn't have signed Kai Havertz, we would have signed Declan Rice instead, right? And then if they backed Lampard, they would have signed Haaland the January before that, and we'd have got both of them for 80 million.
And right?
Lost his job then? I doubt it, because he'd have had the balanced team that he wanted in midfield, and he'd have had Haaland up front scoring a load of goals and would have kept him in the job.
I hear a lot of managers talk about, I was in for this player. Like, Wenger has done that over a number of
years. Yeah, I was about to say that,
Wenger. It's just sort of like, how much were you actually invested in this player, or how much is a bit of a... Yeah. Well, we had a couple of scouts looking at him, and now I'm going to say, yeah, I really wanted this player.
Some of these were actual deals that were on the verge of being done, and I know this for a fact, with Declan Rice especially, and the Haaland thing. Okay, there's been a really long space, and it's been really, really good discussions. Obviously, Chelsea are through to the FA Cup quarterfinals, which is great. 3-2 today. Bad performance, but obviously, we all have a lot of concerns about the future and the things that need to be sorted out, which are way bigger than today's game. And I think we've covered those today. So thank you, everyone, who's contributed. Rambles, Frank, BTNT, Louis when he was on, and others as well. Thank you for coming on. Sorry if we didn't have time to get you up. We've gone through a lot today. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, for being part of this. And we'll be back again on Saturday. I won't be hosting on Saturday because I'm away. But we will be back on Saturday for the Brentford game. I'll be back in for the game after that. So I can't remember what the game after that is, actually. But I'll be back again then. Have a good
rest of the week. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure as always, guys.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and up the Chelsea.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Everyone.
Up the Chelsea.